where we're at, we're at. I mean, it's you know, nobody wants to have been in this position. Nobody wants to have the amount of players and the turnover that we've had to have. But it's also my job to figure it out and to communicate, to lead, to be honest with where we're at.
Mike Vrabel, whose Titans last won a game on Thursday Night Football in Green Bay. They have not won since then, and they now find themselves technically not in first place in their division. However, that title comes down to Week 18, Titans at Jaguars. Winner will win the division. What happens this week does not matter because of the application of tiebreakers. But the Titans at 7-8, Cowboys 11-4. Cowboys still holding out hope of possibly winning the division, Chris. Still potentially catching the Philadelphia Eagles. So the Cowboys want this one. The Cowboys need this one. The Titans don't. And as a result, Derrick Henry is doubtful. Ryan Tannehill's out. He would have been out anyway. Jeffrey Simmons out. Bud Dupree out. Zach Cunningham out. Other players out. The folks at Amazon thought they had a pretty good final Thursday night game of the season until that game became meaningless for the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, it's the right move if you're the Tennessee Titans. Why play them? Why? I mean, what's the point? You know, let your team get healthy here and be as close as they can be to full strength to give your best shot at the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I get that. Yeah, I understand Dallas is still playing for something there. So, yeah, they're going to be on their A game too. And then, you know, by all due accounts, I mean, I expect Philadelphia to beat New Orleans this weekend, and that'll be over. And, you know, this might be Dallas's last showing anyways. They could end up being the team next week that doesn't play starters in the last regular season finale. Doesn't matter. We're the number 5 seed, and so what? Let's just get ready for the playoffs. So this might be their last showing as well. But, yeah, it's unfortunate as a viewer that we're not going to see one more big-time standalone game. It looked like it was going to be awesome. It did. You know, I was kind of excited to see this Dallas defense have to try to stand up to this running attack and Derrick Henry. We've seen that this is an issue for Dallas with big offensive lines and powerful running game. They have a hard time slowing it down, but we're not going to see that. And I think it's totally the right move by the Tennessee Titans. And you get ready for the Jaguars in Week 18 and see where it goes from there.
The NFL hates it, but it's just part of the reality. It is strategic. It is smart. And with only one bye week available per conference,
Yeah. You
get your rest when you can, how you can. I mean, if the Cowboys are locked in at number 5, who are they going to play next week against the Commanders?
That's right. That's what I said.
I said yesterday, if it keeps Aaron Rodgers out of the playoffs, yeah, I mean, you do what you have to do to get the rest when you can get it, and the Titans are getting theirs tonight as they get ready for a game that's coming up, and they get extra time to get ready for it. As compared to the Jaguars, since they're playing Thursday night, they get another mini bye heading into that winner-take-all game in Week 18.
We are going to get Malik Willis tonight, right? That's the important thing. He gets more reps.
Yes.
He gets game time,
yes.
Right? That's what they need. That's the only guy they need to focus on tonight is go, how can we get Malik Willis to feel good, comfortable, to where he can go into the Week 18 game and feel like, hey, wait, I can make a few plays, and if I play smart, you know, we can win this football game. That, to me, is what this night's all about for the Tennessee Titans, the building of Malik Willis' confidence. Other than that, nothing freaking matters other than let's just get healthy for that matchup, and we'll see where that goes, because it certainly hasn't been easy for Malik Willis at this point, and it's not an easy situation he's been thrown into.
14 for 23 last week against the Texans, 99 yards, 2 interceptions, a passer rating of 34.5. Anytime your passer rating is below what it automatically is, if you are just 0 for 1 or 0 for 20, there's like a minimum. If you don't even complete a pass and throw no interceptions, it's like 37. He's below that, thanks to 2 picks on 23 throws with 14 completed for 99 yards. It's just not a good passing performance, and that's where he needs to develop. So you're right, Chris. Get him more reps. Hope the game starts to slow down for him and get him ready for that game against Jacksonville where he's undoubtedly going to be the starter. I mean, I think it's going to be him the rest of the way. There have been different reports about whether or not Ryan Tannehill can come back, and he is a tough SOB who fights through everything he can. but this is one that he's it looks like he's just not going to be able to fight through.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to be too serious to come back from. And you know, again, with the context of the situation, this is an offense that wasn't great to begin with. And you got a quarterback that's, the number one flaw about him was how raw he was. Big arm, great runner, you know, has some really big-time potential as a thrower. It's natural, but playing in the pocket, going through reads, appropriate touch, appropriate, you know, throw on certain routes, that's still in the process of being learned here. So that's where tonight is good. And then hopefully they can take a little bit from what he does tonight and go, oh, okay, wait, he's kind of good at this, and we can build off that for next week. And also, you know, I don't know if we'll see it tonight, but I would think quarterback, you know, run game, as we saw in that one last week, continues to be more of a part of their game plan overall, to where they're going to be like, you know, the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson in his rookie year, I think, next week. This is what it's going to look like, at least where I envision it. But this is not an easy situation. And, you know, this is one where, you know, you'd wonder, you know, why did they go into the year with a rookie quarterback with a team like this that's this raw? And maybe those are some of the reasons John Robinson's not the GM anymore.
Well, and look at those statistics from his three starts. And one thing we don't know, and you're right, Robinson's out, and it's clear that he and Mike Vrabel didn't see eye to eye.
Yep.
And we know very well the Vrabel reaction to the A.J. Brown trade. I wonder what Vrabel thought about Malik Willis and the decision to draft Malik Willis and undermine Ryan Tannehill. Remember how we reacted to it? Even though it was a third-round pick, this was the guy that many thought would be the first quarterback off the board going into. We talk all the time about how the Vegas information as it relates to the draft is so spot on. Wasn't spot on.
They were wrong on that one. They were.
He was the odds-on favorite to be the first quarterback drafted. So, but it brought a level of expectation, like maybe next year Malik Willis takes over, whatever. We don't know, and Mike Vrabel's not going to tell anybody what he really thought of it. But now Mike Vrabel needs Malik Willis because their path to the playoffs is going to hinge on maybe something better than what we saw in that graphic. Don't put that graphic up again, though. That is as bad as it gets from a passing standpoint, and it puts more pressure on Derrick Henry to be the guy who saves the day. Oh, there it is. I said I didn't want to see it. Look away. Look away. Don't eat your breakfast.
Look away!
Not even 100 yards. He threw 23 passes and didn't get to 100 yards. Man.
I know.
I mean, guys run the ball 23 times and get to 100 yards.
Yes. It is troubling. There's no question about that. And, you know, again, you look, Derrick Henry had 23 rushes in that game for 126 yards, to your point. It hasn't been a strength of their football team with Ryan Tannehill at quarterback. They've taken a step back with the loss of A.J. Brown, and Robert Woods hasn't quite been the same way. So, you know, and now you're throwing in a rookie quarterback into that situation. Yeah, good luck. That's a tough one. It really is. So we'll see what they can do. I got a ton of respect for Mike Vrabel. He's an incredible game manager. I think he's still one of the best head coaches in football. I wouldn't put anything by them. I wouldn't be shocked if we're sitting there on Sunday Night Football next week going, look at this. Malik Willis and the Tennessee Titans are winning by 3 late in the fourth quarter. This is unbelievable. I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, they did that to the Kansas City Chiefs with Malik Willis. They can do it to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The problem is there's more film on Malik Willis
there is.
Now, and it
right.
shows.
You know what to expect. So, exactly right.
And again, bottom line is, if you're looking for reasons to watch tonight, I mean, I sold the hell out of the Sunday night game with Tom Brady, maybe the last time you ever see him in primetime. I'll sell that. Bezos, you can owe me. You get to see Malik Willis. Can he get to the point where he'll be good enough for his date with the Jaguars next week? That's the guy to watch tonight. Even as it relates to anyone with the Cowboys, yes, the Cowboys need this game. The Cowboys are the Cowboys, and their fans are probably going to take over that stadium in Nashville. But it's Malik Willis. That's the reason to tune in tonight for the final Thursday night game of the year. More from Week 17, Grab Bag Edition, including the Geno Smith Revenge Bowl. We'll discuss that when PFT Live continues right after this. As you may or may not know, I welcome emails from fans or haters or anyone, Florio@ProFootballTalk.com, and I'll probably just get 15 more now because I said that, but I like interacting. I like hearing what people think. regardless of whether or not it's an insult. So I want to share one that just came through last 10 or 15.
This sounds like an insult with the grin you see on your face.
George is asking me for a favor. George wants me to stop talking with my large hamburger helper hands. It's not an Italian thing. Work on improving your vocabulary, and you will not have to use your hands to accentuate your thoughts. I would greatly appreciate it. Love your show.
Hey, well, George. Hey, forget about it.
George, it is an Italian thing. And it has nothing to do with vocabulary. It's the way human beings communicate. And if I were to use a certain finger on either of my two hands right now, you know which one it would be, George. I'm having fun, George. So anyway, thank you. Hello, George. I hope somebody got George a box of Hamburger Helper for Christmas. I should have asked George for his address and sent him pasta and meatballs edition of Hamburger Helper. All right, week 17 grab bag, NFC playoff picture edition. Let's start with the Jets at the Seahawks. A little Geno Smith revenge on the Jets, a little Pete Carroll revenge on the Jets, who employed him as the head coach for all of 1 year back in 1994. Which quarterback needs to be more central to their team's success, Mike White or Geno Smith?
Wow. This is one where the spotlight's on both quarterbacks, and I know that it's like that, but there's some real scheme X's and O's stuff here where it is going to be important for both. I think if you're going to make me pick one, though, I'm going to pick Geno. I am. Just because, one, the Jets' defense is very good still. And I don't think the Seahawks can do what we saw Jacksonville do to them last week. So Geno, I think, is going to be under pressure. He's got to make sure he limits mistakes. They're not very good at pass protecting. And, you know, they're really not that great in the run game either. They just have a special running back who can make some cuts and some plays and get extra yards. They don't open up, like, real big holes to where you go, ooh, they're dominant there. And then the stress he was under, the duress he was under the last two games against the 49ers and the Chiefs, and damn, now he's got to deal with this pass rush. So he's going to have to find the balance and trying to make plays, protect himself, protect the football, and make it happen that way. And that's why I'll go with Geno in this one. It's a tough call, though, this one.
Yeah, and look, Geno Smith has other things riding on this as well. Both guys are due to be unrestricted free agents after the season. I feel like Mike White has done enough to get someone's attention.
Yeah.
I feel like Geno has kind of slipped after that great start. I mean, the whole team has slipped. It all started when they were literally slipping on the turf in Munich. They've lost 5 out of 6 games starting with that one. They've gone from 6-3 to 7-8. And it's just, can they hold on? Can they? And now they're at the point where they have to thrust themselves back into the conversation. Just like the Jets, these are two teams that have collectively fallen off. Mike White can just say, I don't have anything to do with the past few weeks. I haven't played. So I think it is more on Geno to turn the Seahawks around. I think with Mike White, it's kind of a breath of fresh air. They're going to be happy to have him back.
Right.
Thrilled to move on from this Zach Wilson debacle and rally around Mike White again. Break out their Mike effing White t-shirts and wear them on the plane to Seattle.
Hey, that's where it'll be interesting to see, too. You know, that's why I was like a little going back and forth because, one, the Jets, they can't run the ball, right? And the other thing is that the Seattle Seahawks pass defense is a pain in the butt. It's for real a pain in the butt. They're creative. They're well coached in the pass game. They have a good creative way to attack, you know, your protections, blitz a guy, drop a guy, blitz, whatever. So they do some different things there to where that's where I got into Mike White. I mean, he's going to have a central part in this game this weekend because I don't imagine the Jets being able to just run the ball at will. So that's where it'll be fun. This is kind of under the radar, you know, one of the better games of the weekend because of the things you explained and then the quarterback matchup and Robert Saleh. He came from Seattle. That's where he started his career. Now he's going back there to see the old regime and all that. So this one will be intense and hard hitting.
Minnesota Vikings 12-3 at the Green Bay Packers 7-8. They played way back in week one. It was the only game the Vikings won all year by more than one score. 11-0 in one score games. The Packers will be in good shape against Minnesota as they try to sneak into the postseason if they blank Justin Jefferson.
Keep him from going off, okay? Or keep him, if they keep Justin Jefferson from totally going off, or I don't know if I'm fitting that in there the right way. Contain him to a degree, okay? You're not going to contain him all the way. I understand that. If he has a game where it's like 150 yards, you're going to lose. The game, it's over. But if they can make it to where, hey, it's 60, 70 yards, I would go, ooh, they got a good chance here. That would be, you know, my two cents. It's interesting, this one here. You know, what's interesting about, can the Packers stop your Minnesota Vikings run game? I know you guys aren't great at running the ball, but the Packers stink at stopping the run. And that's where I also think, like, oh, man, that could be trouble. Because we know Kirk Cousins, Dalvin Cook get going, then everything starts to get going. And that's where I do find this matchup interesting, because I think both offenses have the advantage over the opposing defenses.
And the Vikings have done fairly well for themselves in recent years in Green Bay. Didn't go well last year, but they had that tie
right
in Kirk Cousins' first year with the team. Yeah, it was an exciting game that went all the way down to the end. Missed field goals, kept the Vikings from winning. They have confidence there. They play with confidence. During the year of the pandemic, when there were no fans in the stands, you had Vikings jumping up doing the Lambeau leap with no one else around. I mean, they will go there, and they will be able to play their brand of football. The weather shouldn't be a factor. But Justin Jefferson is such a critical component of the offense. I see more and more people talking about him as an MVP candidate. I think it's going to be tough for him to pull it off. But he is on track to break the single-season receiving yardage record. And I know there's 17 games now, not 16, but he's still on track to beat it. At some point, someone is going to beat it. Cooper Kupp made a run at it last year. Jefferson may very well do it this year. Make it 2,000 this year.
Yeah.
Becomes hard not to vote for him for MVP if he gets to 2,000. And if the Vikings, look, they're trying to nail down the 2 seed, which is not going to be easy with the 49ers hot on their heels. And they still have a slim window for the 1 seed. If the Eagles can't get right against the Saints,
right.
If the Eagles end up losing to the Giants, the Vikings could still take the 1 seed away from the Eagles. So the point is, this isn't some throwaway game for a team that's clinched its playoff spot. They still got plenty to play for, and Justin Jefferson playing for history, playing for the record, and playing for maybe some MVP consideration.
Yeah, agreed. It's a fascinating team, your Vikings. It really is. It's still a story and a team that I've never seen a team be less impressive, but be 12-3 and pull out these games. And there is something to be said about that. But it is one of those where every week you scratch your head and go, wait, I don't know exactly how they won that game. You know, it seems like they were outplayed, but they won. They just got, you know, the magic touch this year, that's for sure. And Justin Jefferson is by far the MVP of that football team. And that's where it's interesting this year. I think we have a few teams where you go, like, you know, the teams that are good, the Vikings, the Dolphins. I would even throw the Eagles in there to go, the most valuable player on those teams are 3 receivers. And those are playoff caliber football teams, and you don't always see that. It's kind of different.
And, you know, I was explaining this to my son the other day because he was too young to fully appreciate Randy Moss. Randy Moss was the most explosive, dynamic receiver I've ever seen in my life, insofar as he would get down the field, you would throw the ball, and he would go get it.
Yeah.
But Justin Jefferson is more like Jerry Rice.
Yeah,
he just
that's
does
a good one.
Everything.
Right.
And you can count on him.
Yep.
Anywhere, any place.
Right.
Just like the game the other day, right? It's going to overtime. Kirk Cousins throws a little pass to Jefferson, and he wills his way into field goal range.
Yep.
Now, 61 yards is hardly a gimme, but without that play,
they're
going to overtime, and who knows what's going to happen.
I mean, right.
If we're looking at value, and it's still going to be hard to overcome Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, but we're looking at raw value that a player has to a team. When you can rely on that guy, I mean, think about the Bills game.
Yeah.
Cousins told him, I'm just going to throw it up to you. And he makes one of the greatest catches we will ever see in our lifetime. So, anyway, I'm not making the MVP case for Justin Jefferson now.
No, but
I was all over
correct.
The possibility going into the season.
You were. You're correct Sean with
Payton,
what you said.
I saw Sean Payton on Fox. Sean Payton had a great line on Fox over the weekend. He said, we all root for our narratives. And isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
And that was one of my narratives going into the season, that he could be an MVP candidate, and he is. All right, Bears at Lions. Bears 3-12, Lions 7-8. What's more likely? Justin Fields rushes for 80 or more yards, or Jared Goff throws for 300-plus yards?
Ooh, those are both very likely. I could see both of those happening.
That's not the question.
I know.
More likely.
And so people, you know, I think sometimes, well, I always get questions to people who are like, how come you don't, it took you, how do you, why do you have to like think about those? Don't they give you those before the show? And I'm like, no, we literally see them live just like everybody else. I'm trying to process it. Jared Goff throwing for 300
yards.
But
we could see them in advance if we wanted to.
We could.
The information is available to us if we chose to avail ourselves of it. I think most of the time it's already plugged in. I don't know. I've never checked.
I never opened the sheets the night before to where we have a rundown of our show. So you're right. Maybe it is there. I don't know. But I'm going to go with Jared Goff throws for 300-plus yards. I don't feel necessarily comfortable about that, but I do think that the Lions, with their rushing attack and the way they can run the ball, it's going to make Buffalo play some man-to-man and be in those situations to where I could see him.
Or Chicago.
I was thinking about the Bears in Buffalo last weekend. I could see Goff taking advantage of some of those matchups. Like we've talked about, they're hard to match up with their receivers. They can go. So I'll go with Goff 300-plus yards, but I'm not totally comfortable in that.
What a year from Jared Goff to Jared Goff.
What do you think?
He has had a great year, and he has turned around the perception that he was just a guy they were going to keep until they could get out from under his contract, that's why they got one of the first-round picks they got from the Rams. I think Fields is more likely to have 80 yards. Okay. I just think Fields, that's all they got. That's all they can do.
I know.
That's all they can do. At least the Lions do have a running game. All the Bears have is Justin Fields breaking one or two and backdoor cover. We're doing our picks podcast later, and I heard your voice in my head as I was looking at this game and recognizing the Lions are still playing for playoff possibility. The Bears are cooked, but with Justin Fields, there's always that opportunity to score that backdoor cover when he just does that, slips past someone, and he's gone. He's the most dangerous running quarterback right now in the NFL. All due respect to Patrick Mahomes, who is dangerous in a different kind of way because you never know when he's going to throw it while he's running around. But it's incredible what Justin Fields does running the ball, Chris.
Incredible. He's already in the conversation, maybe the most gifted quarterback we've ever seen running ever. I mean, it's insanity. It is. And, hey, Buffalo was about the first team we've seen last week that contained him. You know, and of course, it's the one, you know, I picked Buffalo to cover, but Justin Fields has burned me so many times picking the team to beat Chicago to cover that I didn't pick it, even though I said on the Picks podcast, it's like Buffalo have a plan, but, you know, we've seen other teams have plans. Detroit does not have Buffalo's defense, and they don't have those two middle linebackers that can run like that. Buffalo had the right attack as far as the things you do to rush Justin Fields. Maybe Detroit can take that into their own game plan. We'll see. But I would expect him to have a few big runs in this one.
Browns at the Commanders.
Whoa.
Browns are done at 6-9. Commanders 7-7-1. All the Commanders have to do is win their last two games, and they are in, possibly by the skin of that tie that they had against the Giants. But that's where a tie becomes handy. You can slip in front of some other teams. Higher total for this one with Carson Wentz back under center. The number of times we say, holy crap, what a throw, or the number of times we say, holy crap, what the hell was that?
That sounds like a Matt Casey question right there about Carson Wentz, who is producing our show today. And it does. It's a Matt Casey got in my ear. He says, it sounds like the screening room. Yeah, because it is. When Carson Wentz plays, we're always like, oh, what a play. And then two plays later, we're like, what the hell was he thinking? What is he, an idiot? That's a little bit what you get with him.
The left-handed pick six in his own end zone from last year is the epitome of Carson Wentz.
Oh, my gosh. Exactly
when
right.
When he's falling down
right.
And he throws the ball up and the Colts player grabs it and walks in.
Or,
not the Colts player, the player, whoever they were playing.
Was that the Titans? That game? I know. The Titans, I think they got that with Matt Stafford in a crazy one, too, so I can't remember which one it is. But then he also had the shovel pass against the Jaguars, right? That got intercepted or maybe fumbled as he was trying to shovel it. He does some of that stuff. But I think this will be a game we say, holy crap, what a throw. All right? I hope he's smart enough to realize, hey, Cleveland's defense is not necessarily, you know, some cupcake. They're still a pretty tough unit there. And then two, I hope he realizes the big picture of the game, that Cleveland's offense is nothing special, that his Commanders defense should be able to keep them in check. So I'm going to go with holy crap, what a throw.
Yeah, you know what? I think so, too. Look, I give some credit to Ron Rivera. He had a choice to make.
Yeah.
And it wasn't something that he made on his own. We talked about this yesterday. Surely he got the finger on the pulse of the locker room. But Carson Wentz is the guy they brought in to be the starter. The only reason Heinicke had a chance to do what he did was because Wentz got injured. The last time we saw Wentz start a game, it was that game against the Bears, and they pull off the victory. And, yeah, there was a questionable non-call of pass interference, but that was when Rivera got a little huffy with the media afterward for constantly questioning Wentz, even though he was the one who was raising the question. I think this is just a great opportunity for Wentz to come in and do some things and kind of rejuvenate his career. He's only been around 6-7 years. I mean, he entered the league the same year as Jared Goff. It would be fitting if Wentz does a little of what Goff has done this year and change some narratives and change some minds. So I'm with you. I think we're going to have more holy crap, what a throw moments, especially because even though the Browns are good on paper, I think they're clearly in playing out the string mode, business decision mode, just get to the offseason healthy mode. Panthers at the Bucks, a huge game in the NFC South. 6-9 Panthers, who already have a win over the Bucks this year. The Bucks a game ahead at 7-8. The Panthers can still win the division by winning out. Possible rhetorical question, what would happen if the Bucks tried playing the whole game in a no-huddle offense?
Yeah.
We see how good they are when they have to slip in a no huddle. And that question came up after the Saints game.
Yes.
Why don't you just do it the whole game?
Right.
You know, why don't they make the whole plane out of the black box material? I think that was an old Jerry Seinfeld line. I mean, why don't you just do the whole game in no huddle if it works so well?
Right. Yeah, and then just let Donovan Smith hold the whole game, and we just won't even pay attention. No problem. Yeah. Oh, yeah, look at that. They're so good at the two-minute drill. They hold every play, and he's throwing it. He's picking them apart. But no, I think it is an interesting thought. It is. And, you know, we know how awesome he is in that situation, Tom Brady. The other thing it does when you go no huddle usually simplifies defenses to a degree. They don't want to call crazy intricate blitzes or coverages because you don't have enough time to maybe communicate it and do all that. So you start to get into some, you know, simpler coverages. So there are some advantages there. You know, but I think there's also the thought of this too, that yeah, they're doing that. We've seen that in two games, but it's the end of the football game versus defenses that are not very good and they're kind of worn out too. You're not necessarily going to see that same energy. And where you got to be careful is you go no huddle and all of a sudden you're off the field in three plays and you ran 10 seconds off the clock.
Right. You're wearing out your own defense.
Exactly. Now the defense is on and then you go, hey, let's go no huddle again. And all of a sudden you go three and out again and you're going, oh crap, we've had the ball for 20 seconds so far today and the other team's had 2 6-minute drives and now we haven't gotten rhythm in offense and our defense is exhausted. So I don't think Todd Bowles, the defensive coach, would go that route. But it is an interesting thought because it's a struggling offense and, you know, there's not a lot of avenues of success that we've seen from them this year.
I like the idea of having it always on the table.
Yeah, I hear you there.
And slipping into it when the moment is right. When you know,
get a first down or two,
and then maybe you go. Being an experienced head coach comes into play.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's and that, remember when Bill Belichick used to love to have the Swiss Army knife guys that could line up in different spots.
So
you can keep going and the other team can't substitute.
Right.
You catch them in
Aaron Hernandez.
A collection of 11 guys
where
you can start slipping guys. Yeah, I was trying not to mention his name, but either of them really. But you can start moving guys around all over the place and you exploit the matchup disadvantage that the other team is going to deal with. So I like that. I don't like doing it. Now, I think it would be foolish to do it all game. But I do like the idea of being ready to go at a given moment.
Yeah.
I like that. That adds an excitement, too, for the offensive players. You never know when we're going to slip into that mode, and you're always kind of on your toes and excited because it's got to be fun for them to just go into kind of fast break, no huddle mode.
We see teams do that. You know, the Eagles can be like that at times where they get a first down or two, and then they start to go, okay, let's get up to the huddle and just stay at the line of scrimmage and keep the pace and the pressure on the defense and go that way. There is, you know, something to that for sure. Protection, Brady being a little jittery, I think that's maybe things that fall into their mind a little bit in that conversation, I would guess. But, yeah, I hear you there. There is some value to have that at your access whenever you want it.
We mentioned the Eagles earlier and the fact that they are still trying to nail down the number one seed in the NFC. As they do, the injuries are piling up. We'll get you up to speed on what the Eagles are dealing with when this Thursday edition of PFT Live continues right after this.
If you and him went up and you guys shot baskets together, he'd whoop you. If you guys went out and you guys raced against each other, he'd whoop you. If you guys went out and, tried to throw the football, see if he was to throw it more accurate or further, he'd whoop you. And so his body heals faster than yours.
Nick Sirianni talking about Jalen Hurts being built different. And look, they're trying to figure out when Hurts can come back from this shoulder injury. He's already missed the Cowboys game. They almost beat Dallas with Gardner Minshew at quarterback. And now it's Gardner Minshew against the Saints, who somehow won in that icebox of a game in Cleveland this past weekend. And the Saints still alive in the chase for the NFC South. So, you know, you're getting these guys banged up, Chris, and they don't have cupcakes down the stretch. And they still could. It's amazing to think they've lost, what, two games all year. They can still lose the last two. They still could. And they better be on guard. And, you know, they haven't had a rash of injuries all year, and they're starting to cluster at a very inopportune time, potentially.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's bad timing. They're still a really good football team, as we saw last week. I mean, we had a quarterback make his first start of the year, and he threw for 355 yards on one of the better defenses in football. And they made some self-inflicted mistakes and still had a chance to win the game. They lost a turnover battle 4-1, and it still seemed like they were controlling the game for a better part of it. So they're a high-quality team here. And, yeah, health, you know, being at full strength is of course the number one issue here, but you know, not far behind that is making sure you got that first round bye, because then that's going to help, you know, or maybe you put that first and the health and issues are second. Either way, they help each other out. They've had the Saints, what, in Philadelphia, I believe, the last 2 years. They've kind of controlled the Saints both times when they've played them. I don't expect Philadelphia to fall off the cliff here or anything like that. We've seen really only one game this year where they've underwhelmed, and that was the Washington game. I know they lost last week, but it wasn't underwhelming, that's for sure. So I'm expecting to win the game. I expect them to have the first round bye, and I think they'll be at full strength come divisional weekend, and that's going to be bad news for whoever's coming into town to play them.
Jay Glazer said last weekend that if the Eagles beat the Cowboys, the likely return for Jalen Hurts is week 18 because they don't want him to go 5 weeks between games.
Right.
If the Eagles lose to the Cowboys, Hurts is going to push to play against the Saints to nail down the one seed. If you were the coach making the call here, and it's close, right, where are you going to go? Do you want him out there to nail down the one seed? Do you put him at risk of further injury and have maybe a 1 or 2 week thing become a 4 to 6 week thing? Is it that important to you to get the one seed, or is it more important to ensure that Hurts is healthy? I'd err on the side of keeping the guy healthy.
Yes. I think there is maybe a line of demarcation, though, that, you know, maybe you can get to, where if you go, okay, wait, maybe he's not 100%, he's 95%. We feel good about that, and then we play him, and he's basically got 3 weeks to get that totally healthy. You know, I could certainly make a logical case there. And you know, this is a big deal to me in the fact that, you know, Mike Florio's power rankings, all right? It's a real thing. They don't want to be going to San Francisco come championship weekend. They don't want to do that. San Francisco is officially in the boat with Philadelphia as one of the best teams in football, if not the best. The team is every bit as good as the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, the quarterback, maybe not there, but we're seeing he's good enough. So that's got to be priority number one to me, is get that first round bye, get everybody coming to Philadelphia to play them there on their turf, grass field, cold weather. That's one of their biggest advantages. So, yeah, there's that mark, Mike. I don't know where you would put it. I don't even know where I'd put it. But if he's close to 90% or above, I'd probably play him and just nail down the number one seed.
See, I would be tempted to give him another week
another week,
go with Gardner Minshew. Minshew, right. Another quarterback who's going to be available. I mean, this free agent market this year for quarterbacks, it seems like it gets crazier every year.
Right.
This year is going to be off the charts crazy. Throw Gardner Minshew into the pool as well, and he's got reason to go out and play well and nail this down and seal his own future. but I just would be nervous about getting Hurts injured. But that one seed is critical.
Yeah, it's tough.
Especially
one.
Because of the 49ers. The way the 49ers play, we talk about this all the time. They are these badass roughnecks that will run through a brick wall. You want to force them to run through as many walls as possible. You don't want to give them a week off.
Exactly.
And give them
I'd be
an easier chance
as hell.
To keep their guys healthy.
Right. Right. I'm with you, Mike. Then you get to play the 49ers in San Francisco, and they're fresh as hell and can just be total renegades and killers. You know, that's yes. So it is a tough one. And you're right. You know, Gardner Minshew, again, they're better with Jalen Hurts. I understand that. But it's not a drop-off to where you go, oh, they can't win the game without him. I do understand that as well. I guess what I would be worried about a little is this too, Mike, where – you know, Gardner Minshew plays, they win, and then next week you have to play for nothing, right? And it's kind of like what you said, where I don't expect to see Jalen Hurts and the starters out there a whole lot to where then you're going, well, he's only played two or three drives in 6 weeks of football here, and here we are in a big playoff game all of a sudden. And that could definitely disrupt the rhythm of the quarterback and give you some issues there too.
All right, he's not the only injured Eagle, as we mentioned earlier. So there are five names I want to give you, and we want to try to rank these in order of importance for these guys being healthy for the playoffs. And obviously, we'll give the one spot to Jalen.
Definitely.
Hurts. That's the most critical guy that will be healthy for the playoffs with the shoulder injury. The other guys are Lane Johnson with an abdominal injury that he claims he's going to play through and defer surgery and take some time off and be ready for the postseason. Miles Sanders has a knee injury, star running back. Avante Maddox, corner with a toe. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, lacerated kidney. They're waiting for him to come back. After Hurts, which of those four is the most important?
I think that right off the bat, I'm going to go with Lane Johnson. That to me is the guy I look at. I mean, you said it earlier this week. This is the best right tackle in football, or certainly in that conversation, and we know their offensive line play is really one of their greatest advantages. I'll go with him one, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson two. Okay, he's a special player, and he gives them, Mike, that versatility of like kind of like what you were talking about a few minutes ago with the Patriots and the mismatches and all that. You're never mismatched with Chauncey Gardner. He tackles like a linebacker, and he covers like a secondary player. So that's where he's a great advantage for them. Then I'll go Miles Sanders and Avante Maddox. I think that's probably how I would do it. What do you think?
I agree with you. I may flip Gardner Johnson and Sanders.
Yeah.
I may.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's close there.
Right.
Because they've been getting it done without him. But, boy, it's great to have him because he's just that right place at the right time guy that pops up and makes a big play that tilts the field in favor of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Right.
But I think they're good enough that's just kind of a luxury. That's, you know, the little sprinkle of cinnamon on top of the cherry, on top of the whipped cream on top of the cake. They it's great. It's smart move, great trade, but I feel like they're good enough to keep going without him because they've kept going without him.
I don't
him.
Disagree.
So the longer a guy's been gone,
right. The
easier it is to say, yeah, they can keep going without the guy.
But
Hurts is the guy
they
need.
Right.
And definitely for the playoffs and at least to win one game between now. I mean, really, wouldn't it be something if the 49ers steal the one seed or the Vikings steal the one seed? I mean, those are two places, and I don't know. The Vikings, look, they've played every game so close, and they got beat 40-3 in their own building. But still, that's not necessarily a place where you want to go in the postseason.
Oh, agreed.
You want them leaving their dome and coming outdoors to you.
Agreed with you there. You know, and yes, it is still an issue. And you know, to that point, San Francisco and Minnesota having to go play Philly in the cold and the elements out there, that won't be necessarily the best for them either. And your conversation with the Chauncey Gardner-Johnson and Miles Sanders there, it's splitting hairs. I kind of feel like that with the offense, where I go, well, they if they put Gainwell or Boston Scott back there, they might not be quite as good as Miles Sanders, but it's not going to be a drop off. Where I think about Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, again, as to your Patriots point and to the 49ers that you brought up once again. It's the 49ers are one of those teams, Mike, that they put two tight ends on the field, McCaffrey, and then, you know, Ayuk and Deebo Samuel, and you get worried about, oh, man, they're smashing us in the running game, and then the next play they're in empty personnel in the shotgun. Or they do that with two backs, with Juszczyk at fullback, and then one tight end and the two receivers. And that's where Chauncey Gardner comes in handy in those type of matchups where, like I said, you don't have to substitute. He can play the run and be physical that way. And then, oh, wait, they're passing. He can cover too. But, yeah, they're good no matter what, Mike. I think that's what we're saying. And I'd be shocked if they don't seal up this one seed this week.
What a game that'll be if and when the Eagles and the 49ers cross paths. It feels even more inevitable than Bills Chiefs, frankly, because I don't know who else in the NFC can disrupt it the way there's maybe a team or two that can disrupt Bills Chiefs.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm not sure anybody can disrupt Eagles 49ers.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. In case you were drunk, high, passed out, any of the above before putting your presents under the Christmas tree, we'll look at some of the things you might have missed from Week 16.
Never a meaningless game. Never, ever, ever, ever. You play to win every game. The only way I rest players is if they're hurt and can't go.
Or if management tells me to take Jalen Hurts out of a game and put the backup quarterback in the game in the second half of a winnable Week 17 matchup from a couple of years ago. That was kind of the death knell for Doug Peterson in Philadelphia. And he's the one that always gets the blame for that. I think in that comment, he's trying to let people know it wasn't his decision to remove Jalen Hurts from that game when they could have beaten the Commanders late in the year. And who would have delivered? It would have been the Giants.
The Giants.
Who would have gotten in the playoffs?
The Giants. Joe Judge in the first year, right? That's what's crazy, too. It really is. That's one that I think we all kind of thought might have happened, but we weren't sure, and I think you're right. I think Doug Peterson's letting everybody know right there that that was not his call.
All right, matchup draft for Week 17. Any and all of the matchups that catch your eye as we get ready for the games to come. Chris, what do you have?
Well, I'm going to go to the game of the weekend, and that is the Bills-Bengals Monday night. And specifically, what I am really excited to see is Joe Burrow versus McDermott and Leslie Frazier. All right. Burrow is just an absolute assassin in the pocket. I mean, the Patriots tried to play every zone invented in the history of football in the first half last week. And it's just, he just picks it apart. He knows his pass rush isn't great and he just finds a little hole and boom, boom, boom. The Buffalo loves to play zone defense. That's what they are. They don't really want to play man. And when you play man, you know what's going to happen. He's going deep to Chase or T. Higgins, and he did that. The second New England played man a few times last week, he attacked them like that. So the game plan they have to take some of these short passes in the zone away, I'm very excited to see what they do and what they come up with, because it's a tough task stopping Burrow in this offense in that department.
You know, in a vacuum, I would look at Panthers, Buccaneers, 6-9 versus 7-8 and say, who cares? Well, we know what's on the line here because the NFC South is so down this year. I'm going to see the Panthers rushing attack against the Buccaneers.
Yeah, I like it,
defense,
Mike.
Because they were spectacular against the Lions. Deontay Foreman and Chuba Hubbard both had over 100 yards. And Sam Darnold kind of quietly interjecting himself into this nutty quarterback carousel in the offseason. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent. I mean, it is wild. It is crazy. And they may end up in the playoffs. And they may propel Steve Wilks into the permanent coaching job, as permanent as it ever is. They've got guys who are coming out now. I think Derek Brown said, we want Steve Wilks to be our coach. And this isn't just a short-term, end-of-season interim job. They've been with him a long time. And they may take him to the playoffs. And their chances of getting there are going to depend on that running game doing what it did against the Lions, or at least something close to it,
right,
against a better defense on paper in the Buccaneers.
Yeah, it's a better defense. I mean, those two running backs had 100 at halftime, both of them last week, just to describe the butt-whooping they were giving the Detroit Lions in the running game. 100 each at halftime. That's like insanity in the membranity, all right? That is the matchup to watch. And you're right about Sam Darnold. You know, they run the ball. They play man-to-man. Uh-oh, DJ Moore, watch him. Terrace Marshall going deep. He puts it on. And then he can run the read option. So they have found their formula. And Steve Wilks always has been. He's one of the best defensive minds in football. He's creative. He's made things simpler for them, and they're playing fast. I wish they had J.C. Horn this weekend. That would have made things real interesting. All right. Well, they got Vinny and the Jets, but we going with Geno versus the Jets in round two. I'm excited to see that. I mean, both teams are hanging on by a thread for their playoff hopes. They need that. We know it. It's Geno against his old squad, and he's playing a head coach who's playing the Seattle 3 scheme, you know, that was invented up there with Pete Carroll. So dealing with that defense is going to be tough. He's going to be under pressure. I want to see how he handles it and if he can make some plays against them.
I'm actually going to go with Russell Wilson versus Patrick Mahomes round two, because the last time around, Wilson made it interesting after the Chiefs had the big lead. And I don't see the Chiefs showing any sympathy. What a bad week it's been for the Broncos. Well, we're going to go make it worse. We're going to do whatever we can to stick it to the Broncos. The Chiefs need to win this one, because if the Bengals can deliver on Monday night, what happens?
Yeah.
Chiefs are back in the spot.
Right.
That they need, the one seed. So I just think it'll be fun to watch the Chiefs doing Chiefs things, and maybe Russell Wilson makes it interesting. And if the Chiefs get a chance to do 51-14 like the Rams did to the Broncos, the Chiefs will do it. We'll take a break and do round three of the matchup draft when we wrap up this Thursday edition of PFT Live right after this. It makes all the sense in the world. All right, round three of the matchup draft for week 17. Christopher, what do you have?
Well, I'm going to go to Washington-Cleveland matchup. Washington, of course, huge for them. They need to win to stay alive for the playoffs or keep their seventh seed, you know, intact right now. And I think the thing I'm looking at is just, you know, the Cleveland rushing attack versus that Washington D-line. A Browns O-line, Commanders D-line. It's one of the best O-lines in football. You know, their traditional running game, taking away quarterback runs and all that, is arguably the best in the game with the Dallas Cowboys. And we know the Commanders' D-line and what they are, and this is going to be paramount. Their ability to stop that part of the Cleveland attack will go a long way to them getting the victory here. It is a game where I do think Cleveland's defense could pose some problems for the Washington offense. So the defensive line, which has been the star of the show for them, they need to play really awesome here in Week 17.
You know, I'm trying to find a game we haven't talked about, but let me tell you, there are some games on this weekend schedule that we just as soon never talk about. Gardner Minshew, I mentioned this earlier. He's one of the various quarterbacks who will be available in free agency. He was a starter for a couple of years with the Jaguars. The Eagles got him for nothing. He's going against the Saints. It's one thing to audition for the league. He's auditioning directly for the Saints. Yeah. Wouldn't he be a great alternative to whatever the Saints have right now between Andy Dalton and Jameis Winston? I think Gardner Minshew would be perfect for the Saints. And this is his opportunity to bedevil the Saints and maybe get them to say, hey, we kind of like this guy. Let's put him at the top of our list. So that makes that game a little more compelling to me if Minshew actually plays.
Yeah, I hear you there. And yeah, he's got a chance to be a starter for somebody next year if he plays well down the stretch here.
Makes the game more fun. Hopefully we've made the games a little more fun for you. Thanks for some of your time today.
See ya. Tomorrow.